Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 169.
The 60s have gone past very fast.
It's a rapid time,
yes.
It was a rapid time. It was a busy time for all.
It was a busy time, absolutely.
Yes, 169. 69. Way.
Yes.
100 times.
100 times. Exhausting.
Well, that is exhausting.
Exhausting.
How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
You're all right.
All right.
You're all right. You're tired.
Tired.
Why are you tired?
I don't know. Brain's not working.
Well, you were saying you were quite enjoying now not having to do lots of an evening because of weeks and weeks and weeks of packing. You're now firmly ensconced. What is
it? Yeah, I can do nothing. Because everything is in storage.
Exactly.
So, we go, I want to do something. You can do nothing. You must read this book or play this game or stare into a corner.
And are you doing all three of those?
Those are my only options currently.
That's the dream, surely. How is Baldur's Gate? We were discussing this on Patreon this week. That,
very good so far. I got killed by goblins last night. I was not happy.
What did you do?
I obviously annoyed them.
Did you offend them greatly?
I offended them greatly, so they took to stabbing me.
Did you serve the port on the wrong side? These goblins are very fussy about
their manners. They are known to be very pernickety about their manners.
And we're currently recording this racing against a delivery driver. Because where all the bottles are, they have all the ingredients. And I went, you know, I've only got lemons in. You don't need limes, do you? And you went, fuck.
Yes, I need limes.
So we decided
Sinead
to order
was woefully
in
unprepared.
For dreadful, a thing I'm not supposed to know about.
Dreadful behaviour. So disorganised.
So we decided to order lots of other things, not just sending a delivery driver out for limes. No,
that seemed extravagant.
Yes.
So it was like, oh, look, let's get all the chocolate! Yeah.
Oh, we're going to get chocolate snacks this time.
Oh, well, I am.
But I don't get any.
You didn't ask for any. You asked for some tonic water and washing up liquid.
Yeah, I'm feeling fancy in my cocktail making.
They're yours. I'm getting chocolatey snacks.
Lovely. It's so nice to have you around to the house.
Might maybe share.
Any poisonings this week?
No.
No? No.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. Fucking solicitors. Hurry up.
Yes.
Otherwise, I am going to poison them. I think I should start issuing threats, potentially.
I think you just need to be very pushy with
solicitors. I think my emails, how's it going? I'm just like, can I get an update, please? What's going on? I think I'm just being far too nice and polite. I think you need to go, what's going on? If I don't hear back, I'm going to come and kill you.
That is one way of doing
it. So I think I need to be more pushy.
Yes.
In my emails.
Famously, lawyers will take issue with that.
Will they?
And they will have grounds, I fear, to give you a big long list of why you shouldn't do that. Okay. But you don't know until you try.
Maybe tone it down slightly. Somewhere in the middle, perhaps.
I 100% encourage you to do this because I would like to see what happens.
Right.
Knowing there will be no repercussions on me whatsoever. But for whenever you bail you out
idea.
Of jail.
It's all Sinead's idea.
And they will just be going, who is Sinead? Why do you keep blaming everything on her? Is she a figment of your imagination?
No, she's a witch that lives on the hill.
And they know not to bother me.
The limes are here!
Are they here? Hey! There are limes!
Woo!
Podcast, my friend.
But I want my chocolate snacks!
You can get those in the break. When you've done, look, when you've done some more podcasting, then you get a snack.
Okay.
Then you get a treat.
Well, speaking of making people fetch things for you and and then drinking them, I think it's time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Oh, yes, we should indeed. Thanks must go this week to Lindsay G.
To Sarah Sophia Sanderson.
To Heather Rillo.
And to Britnick.
Marvellous.
Thank you so much, you lovely, sexy, sexy Patreon subscribers. Thank you to everyone who has subscribed. Thank you to everyone who has upgraded as well. A few upgrades as well. Patreon is completely flexible, so you can come in at $5 a month. You can go to $15 a month if you want a little care package and extra monthly special content. Also, there's been an update on Patreon. It's literally just come through in the last couple of days. So any Patreon subscribers, check your settings in Patreon because you should be able to play those exclusive episodes through Spotify. If you link your Spotify with your Patreon account,
how cunning.
It should pull through. I encourage people to try. If you have a problem, please message Patreon.
Yes, nothing to do with us.
We can't do anything about it. You can. We don't know. We don't know. But we got a big email going, oh, link up your Spotify. And I've gone and tested it on my one, but then I'm not subscribed to us.
So are you not?
No. Oh. I don't know. It won't let me pull through this stuff.
Dreadful
like
behavior.
My own podcast, so I can't listen to it on Spotify. I'm like, well, but I pay. I give you money. But still, yes. So check that out. We had fun on Patreon this week.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
The lead mask things.
Yes. The lead mask.
The lead mask case.
We had a mystery on our hands in beautiful Brazil. Yes, the lead mask. That was weird.
That was odd.
I like the culty elements to it. Definitely think there was some culty stuff. And aliens.
Obviously.
Yes. If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, please consider joining us and supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/The Poisoners Cabinet. A lovely place and a lovely community. And we do have more book chat coming up at the end of this month as well.
I should probably read a book.
Yes, you should. It's a short book this month. It's good. It's very gothic. It's based on Edgar Allan Poe's Fall of the House of Usher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you like that. Yeah. You like that. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Not to read a book, I'm not, no.
But everything else
Everything else, bring it on.
Reading, no, but everything else in between it. You will read no warning signs and labels.
I will read nothing.
You will just let things be done to you and do them to things.
Exactly.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Yeah, okay.
Or we could drink some poison. And we could just talk about cocktails.
That's what that too.
We could do that?
Let's do both.
Oh, okay, good. Well, great. That fairy liquid tonic water cocktail I'm going to mix up in a minute should get us there no matter what. Let's go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is my story this week, and we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavor our cocktail of the week. My story, so my pick, and this week's secret ingredient is... sheep.
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 Delightful.
Sheep. Lovely, fluffy, sexy sheep.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, a lovely, fluffy sheep.
Ooh, lovely, fluffy sheep.
Fluffy.
Lovely,
no, a fluffy, nice, fluffy sheep.
Fluffy, lovely sheep.
You're a Kentish lad. Yeah. You ever been to like the county shows or like a farming show where they gussy up the sheep and then they pick the prettiest sheep?
Yes.
I mean, it's great, isn't it? I love that. When they just like floof up the sheep and give them a nice bath.
Yeah, exactly. Give them a big old blow dry. Yeah. Get the hair dryers out. Really fluff them up. A few ribbons in there. It's
yes,
grand.
Just clean the shit off the back of them, basically, is all it requires. And you've got fluffy sheep.
Yeah, the pretty sheep have a big ribbon.
Yeah, we are. Well, these sheep are very clean. All will be revealed.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But with sheep as your inspiration or ingredient. Yeah. Ingredient.
Well,
what have you come up with?
Was tempted to do a mutton-based cocktail.
I mean...
Yeah. But I decided against. So what we are going to have.
Okay.
We are going to have the lion and the lamb.
Oh my God, okay. I'm really moved by that title.
The lion and the lamb.
It's biblical, isn't it?
Could be.
Oh, what am I thinking of?
Anything else?
Oh no, that's that terrible line in frickin' Twilight. The lion fell in love with the lamb.
Oh, right. Oh,
yeah, everyone's, oh my God, that's so deep. No, it's not.
It was Christians and the Lions.
It was a Christians and the Lions.
I think you're thinking, well, that's
no, no, but that, there's, yeah, in the Bible, there's Christians and Lions.
I don't think the Christians were dressed up as sheep at the time.
Hey, come on, Lions, make it sexy, make it sexy.
Into that amphitheatre, cotton wool all over the place.
Well, they wanted to entice the Lions. I bet you they dressed up some Christians as sheep. And well, let's just see how this affects things.
See what happens.
But isn't there another fable about a mouse that pulled a thorn from a lion's paw?
Yeah, no lambs involved there, though.
No, I know. I was changing it in my head that a lamb pulls
right.
a thorn from a lion's paw with his little hooves without disposable thumbs.
Disposable thumbs.
That's why it was faking it. It didn't work.
Well, like the idea of disposable
disposable thumbs. The sheep had put on disposable thumbs to give the impression that they would be helpful in that situation. 30 minutes of the sheep trying to get the thorn. Like, I think you need a mouse for this job. I don't think this is going to make the Bible.
No, I'm still going with disposable thumbs.
Disposable thumbs.
That's funny.
Okay, the lion and the lamb.
Lion and the lamb. It promises with or without much. Disposable thumbs, I don't
disposable
know.
Disposable thumbs are optional. Yes, it promises. It sounds grand.
I'm glad.
I'm expecting grand things. I think it is high time for us to parade into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Well, Nick, you have some chocolate peanuts.
Chocolate
so there'll be much crunching and chewing through
yum,
this.
Yum, 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 yum.
But we also have the lion and the lamb.
Lamb.
It's so grand. It's so grand as a title.
I'm glad
and
you approve.
And it looks very pretty.
Yeah.
Orange, golden hue, much like a lion. Lion's
much,
mane.
Much like that, yes.
Yes.
Much like a lamb.
But not like a many orange lambs
many,
where you come from?
Many.
Well, you come from Thanet. Who knows what goes on down there with your lambs? It looks full as well. I approve.
I'm glad you approve.
Yes, as opposed to last week, Spirit Forward, which was just bourbon, which was fun. Editing that back was a lark. But yes, it looks very pretty. I think we should dive in.
Okay.
Okay, so
see what happens.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Ooh.
Okay.
Oh, I like that.
I like that.
Was not what I was anticipating.
Fruity. Sharp. It doesn't have a lot of aftertaste. But
true.
Maybe that's just me. Mm-hmm. Maybe we blind ourselves. We have just mainlined a load of chocolate. Yeah, No, that's nice.
That's a good one.
It's complex. It's got things.
It's got things in it.
Things going on. What I know is in this?
What?
Lime.
Limes. Maybe a bit of lime.
Yes, because we had to order in especially. Sorry, I'm going to say right now that I laughed very hard earlier on. Nick made me laugh. And sometimes when that happens, it loosens something old and decrepit in my lungs. I'm not kidding. This happens sometimes. And it sort of brings on an almost asthmatic kind of effect.
Nice.
So you can hear it.
It's actually your lungs coming loose.
I'm coughing. Can you hear that kind of wheeziness
Yeah,
sometimes it happens. So I apologise if I sound croaky and I start coughing uncontrollably. But the booze will help.
The booze, yeah, absolutely. What could possibly go wrong?
Okay, so there's lime.
There's lime.
Is there something cherry in here?
No.
Shit. Every time you bastard. Orange. Juice?
No.
A juice of some kind?
Apart from lime, no.
What else is in there? I hate the floral fruity ones because I can never guess. And then as soon as you say it, peach? Apricot?
No.
Any other fruits?
No.
There's no other fruits? What? Okay.
This is fern.
Floral? What? Okay. I don't know. I don't even know what the main spirit is in this. Is it gin?
Nope.
You know what? I give up because it's lies. You're going to turn around and tell me it's a tequila sunrise and I'm sick of this.
There's one thing in here that we have never had before.
Oh, okay.
So that's new.
Good. I'm glad I didn't guess that. That's why I didn't guess it, because that threw me.
Right, yes, absolutely.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it may be.
One more guess.
One more guess.
Like a brandy.
No.
Okay, just go.
Bourbon.
We're
back on the bourbon again.
Right.
Then we have some orgeat.
The almond syrup.
The almond one, which I just bought of all this time. Last time I tried to make it was a disaster. so I just thought, bugger out, buy a bottle. So yeah, it's got some almond in there.
Okay.
Has some lime juice in there. I just have some bitters, a bit of Angostura bitters.
Okay, nice, yes.
I know. And the new thing that we've not had before.
Yeah.
We've not had before. Pimento. It's known as pimento dram, or also is sometimes called St. Elizabeth's Allspice.
What?
So it's, which is a new thing, which I've come across in recipes before. And I thought, I haven't got that. I'm not going to buy it. I saw this one. I thought, okay, I'm going to buy it.
Witchcraft? What? It's the thing that's in olives?
No. It is a Jamaica. It comes from Jamaica. And I think it is something to do with... What are they?
Well, I actually don't know what that is.
I think...
It's like it's a type of like a
type of
pepper.
A thing. Yes,
yeah,
it's a thing.
It's a pepper that's not a pepper.
It's an allspice, but then lots of other spices. So it's also known as St. Elizabeth's Allspice Dram.
So is this meant to have a flavour of allspice then?
Yeah, absolutely.
Grab
the bottle.
Oh, okay.
It's really nice. So it smells really good. I think it'd be great at Christmas.
No, this is lovely. God, now you've said it. It's got a sort of a spicy, clovey,
spiciness to it, hasn't it? It's a rum base. It's a rum base with lots of spices. I mean, but in a rum based.
Secret spices.
Secret spices. Many, many secret spices.
You are making it sound like it's the KFC secret recipe. I mean, if it wasn't that, that's great. Yeah, that's great. I'd bottle that. Oh, so, okay, well then together with the bourbon. Now
no,
you said
it's getting spicy.
All I'm getting is allspice. Of course it's that.
It does have a Christmassy twang.
Yeah, this is a good Christmassy drink.
That's
a
good Christmassy drink, this one.
I'm also blown away by the colour of that.
Mm.
Because that doesn't make sense to me, because bourbon is brown. Well, this I think it's just very brown.
It's been diluted by just by the lime and the orgeat have mellowed the colour.
Oh yeah, you can make many a Christmassy cocktail with that. I wonder what else would you serve that with? Would you serve it over ice or is it always a mixer?
No, I think you could absolutely do it neat with some ice.
Shots.
Maybe not shots.
For my chest, for my wheezy chest. It seems like the sort of thing that would soothe it.
In a wee little sherry glass.
Yeah.
In a very civilised way.
All right, well, we'll have a little glass of this after the podcast when you help me roll up my tent that I unfolded earlier.
Yay!
Yay! That's fun. It's a challenge. Physical challenge.
Things fun things to look forward to.
Well, you get to drink while judging me doing all the physical labour.
Oh, that's fine then. Very much sounds like you want me to get involved in the physical labour.
I just need you to direct me because I'm short
fine.
It's a huge tent and I need
left
to sort
a bit,
of fold
right
it up.
A bit.
Yeah, that.
No, you've missed the fridge. Come on.
Come out now. Come out now.
I need another drink. Come on. To the freezer. The freezer's on the right. Tent's blown away by now.
He said there's no tent anymore. I'm like, but Nick, the tent. You're like, screw the tent.
Screw the tent. I want to
sell the tent for more pimento. Lovely. Well, that is a resounding success. And the name, why?
I have no idea.
The Lion of the Lamb, it makes no sense.
So no, it's the bourbon, the lion, and it's been tamed by the lovely other things.
Well, lamb's pretty spicy, if it is.
By the almondy lamb. Oh, spicy almondy lamb. Yeah.
Sounds like a lovely stew, actually. Yeah. Oh, I'm down with this. Lovely. Well, with the lion and the lamb firmly in hand.
Yeah. Oh, that was some ham. Nice Christmassy ham.
I thought you were just rhyming there. Sorry. I thought you were going with a lamb and then some ham.
And,
and then we'll
and
put
then
it on some spam.
Put some spam. Make a nice little glaze.
A glaze.
Oh. Oh, go get a ham.
Fetch a ham,
fetch
woman.
A ham. Fetch a ham. Fetch you don't have one. You're Irish. There should be three in the house at least.
Yeah. With the cocktail and various recipes in our head.
Some ham.
On our way to ham, shall we also go via Storyville?
Why, yes, absolutely.
Would you like a story?
Yes.
Okay.
Ham as well.
Well, you know what? You've got chocolate covered raisin. There's a bit of ham in the fridge if you want to go and get some. So this week we have a story. And again, one that I thought we must have done this. How have we not done this story? A few people guessed about it on when we put the secret ingredient out on social media. Not of the story, but where we might be going. We are going to Australia.
Oh, that's quite sheepy.
Yep, very sheepy.
There are a lot of sheep
very
out there.
Sheepy. Not going to New Zealand. Sorry, the people who said New Zealand and started to argue we have more sheep. No, it is Australia. We're going down under.
Okay.
To tell the story of the Botany murderess.
Ooh.
The Botany Bay Borgia.
The Botany Bay. Oh, yes, I have heard this.
Borgia of Botany Bay.
A Borgia of Botany Bay.
Yes, yes. But an interesting story, because you sort of hear the headline and you go, oh, you'll come back to it. And then you dive into it and go, oh, that's great.
Okay, good.
Yeah, the first woman to be hanged in Sydney. And coincidentally, the last woman to be executed okay. in New South Wales. This is the tale of Louisa Collins. Now, it's also a story that gives pause for thought, because lots of people have revisited this case in recent years and gone back and gone, hey, should she have, what happened to her? Should it have happened at all? Should we think about this in a different way? So people may have pause for thought in it. Are we going to present the facts as best we have them? And I will say right now that a lot of the facts are taken from newspaper reports that were very, very biased. Which makes for great podcast writing,
yes.
Because people are reporting this absolutely as true when it's very much opinion-sided on the newspaper where they can go, oh, she a bitch.
Let's go with alternative facts.
But yes, yeah, so you know, exercise your judgment as we go. I'll also give a shout-out to the beautiful book, The League of Lady Poisoners, which we received an advance copy of.
I've heard of that book.
Very, very kindly received an advance copy of this beautiful book that is out in the autumn, and it is an illustrated guide to lady poisoners over the centuries. And many of the cases that we've covered, but very well written, very beautifully illustrated. Louisa Collins was in here, and I was researching, and it was just coincidence we got the book. So off we go down under. So Louisa Collins was born Louisa Hall in August in 1847. So August, not the same.
Okay.
There's a small link. In Scone, or Scone, depending how you want to say it, New South Wales, she is the fourth of nine children to Henry and Catherine Hall. Henry, originally from Birmingham in England. Mm-hmm. Huzzah. Mother from Dublin. Yes, what are they doing in Australia?
One imagine they weren't too nice, or they've done something naughty.
Catherine, fine. Catherine just emigrated. Right. Just wanted a new life down under. Who can blame her? It's a beautiful place. Henry, transported. Transported there in 1832.
Stealing a shoe.
We don't know what it was. I did try and dig around and find out. If anyone knows, let me know. But feel free to guess if you want to, because he does not figure in this story beyond this point that he birthed the woman we're going to talk about.
Did he?
So, well, he provided the seed.
Right.
He didn't give birth to her.
He birthed her. Okay. Fathered.
Seeded.
Who the hell has ever said that?
I did just now.
Yeah, and don't ever say
it
again.
Won't catch on.
It really won't.
Maybe that was it. Maybe that was his crime. Seeding all over the place. So anyway, he cleaned himself up and went to Australia, transported. But he got his freedom, was able to marry, met lovely Catherine, Irish woman, and they went on and had many babies. Not terribly wealthy, as you can imagine, but hardworking. And Louisa was raised in this sort of hardworking family and expected to go into service by the age of about 14. She would have to start working. Now, not much else is known about her childhood. Other than her, in her early years, she was, according to one report, the pet of the village.
Oh.
Lovely, beautiful. Her life is all about work and, you know, having to scrape together a living. She's also blessed with good looks. She is, Louisa, lovely, plump, she's called, plump brunette. Eyes, apparently.
My God, what a beauty. She had eyes.
She had eyes. Yeah, the whole lot, the whole package.
My God.
Makes her sound terribly.
She had plump brown eyes.
Plump brown. They'd protruded from the skull. Yes. The rest of her, shocking.
In a box, it was very disturbing.
But of a charming nature, very pleasing on the eye and of a charming nature. And she attracted many admirers. Lots of young men wanted to step out with her, to call upon her in her teenage years. Louisa loves this.
I'm sure she does.
Loves the attention. I mean, because what else is there to do? What else is there to do? You're either helping the family work and slave and eat and sleep barely and then work again and then you're going into service. You're going to find fun wherever you can.
Yeah.
And she found fun flirting in...
Is that old needlework?
Needlework.
Those are your options.
Very erotic needlework she was doing, showing it to all the boys through the window. According to the Sydney Evening News, she had a reputation as with good looks, attractive presence, and winning ways. She was no sooner in her teens that she developed all the qualities of a country coquette and earned herself the reputation for being a heartless flirt.
Oh.
She consequently had many suitors and youthful sweethearts.
That sounds delightful.
Yes, I feel like that's your sort of aspiration, actually, to be a country coquette.
I am, thank you. Aspiration, indeed. How about you?
You're known in all the boroughs.
I have achieved that many times over.
So she is enjoying being coquettish and flirting with all the boys. But at the age of 18, she meets a man named Charles Andrew, a butcher working in Scone. And he is 14 years her senior. I say meet, mother sort of shoves her in his direction. He is a widower, apparently.
He needs a wife.
He needs someone to handle all the chops. So he's a butcher. He doesn't appear to be a very good one because his career sort of does not continue in butchering, which always puzzles me. It's like, how bad a butcher can you be? But
more quite bad.
Well, maybe he didn't. Maybe there weren't even pigs he was cutting up or cows. It was just bits of wood, and everyone like, there's only so many splinters we can handle before we raise an issue there. He's a sensible man for the daughter to wed. He's available. That's the main thing. Oh, great. So Louisa and he were married. Louisa would later say, I never liked or cared for Andrews. He'd always been very boring.
Yeah.
And he is. He is very set in his way, steady, boring, doesn't have any vices, doesn't want to do anything apart from earn a wage, raise children, sit down, stare at the wall, read from the Bible, maybe occasionally, and then same thing all over again tomorrow.
Out of many of the husbands we've covered, it doesn't sound like the worst.
He's not the worst as far as we can see. No, there's no inference of any violence.
Yeah.
But he has very firm ideas about, you know, no, this is your life. Whereas Louisa doesn't agree with this. She's young. She's flirtatious. She wants to go dancing. She really likes to drink. She's tried beer Ooh. And she's also tried brandy.
My God.
And she has developed a taste for it.
Nice.
Oh, yes, she likes it.
You're getting on well, I feel.
Yeah. After the first of her children is born, starts drinking relentlessly, if the reports are to be believed. She's a woman who drinks every day, and that's cause for scandal. Drunkenness? A woman who drinks? My. Rather than just a small pimento at Christmas. In the marriage, she does her duty in that they have 9 children.
That's pretty good going, yeah.
2 unfortunately die in infancy, just because babies die.
That's the way.
But yes, she's shooting out babies. In between this, she is going out dancing and drinking as much as she can, but Charles is always there to reprimand her. He's like, you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be going out. You should be at home looking after the children. None of this drink.
Having
none
more
of that.
More babies.
That's your job. Now, where people start to feel sympathy for Louisa is this setup, really, if you can look back in hindsight. What has she got to live for? She's sort of forced into a marriage with a man who's very boring, and that's your life. Have babies. Help him with work. Don't go out. Don't have fun. If you enjoy a tipple, no, that's not allowed. You're a woman. Women don't do such
things.
They don't
know. They don't have fun.
Now, we don't know how much she really was drinking at this point. Nowadays, who gives a shit? Back then, she could have been having the occasional sherry and would have been called a drunkard. Or she could have been absolutely necking bottles of tequila, even though that wasn't widely available.
Put absolutely out of her mind every night.
Out of her mind, singing and dancing, causing a scene. But basically, it's talked about enough that she is a drunkard. Life's not getting any easier for the family, as I said. Charles struggling for work as a butcher, not doing very well at that.
Well, if his wife's out cavorting at all hours,
how can he be
how
expected?
How could he possibly cut up things?
How can he identify a cow at 50 paces? No, he was granted a license to slaughter animals in his own yard.
Okay.
Within a year, he had somehow managed to rack up enough debt that he was declared insolvent. How bad a butcher are you?
Yeah.
How do you have that much debt? There's no inference that he was a gambler or anything like that.
Probably just a bad businessman. He may well have been an excellent butcher and skilled with a blade and all that sort of stuff. But if you're a terrible businessman, I'm going, right, okay, I'm going to order 12 cows. And he gets 12 cows delivered and 11 of them are rotted before the first one's bits have been sold or whatever. Then he's like, oh, fuck. I didn't think that one through. Order one cow at a time next time.
Because he had that license in his yard.
Yeah.
His yard is full of exotic creatures.
There's like cows and peacocks and ostrich and there's a kangaroo in a corner. It's like, kangaroo's the assistant. It's just like, no, stop buying animals.
It's a small town It's a village, really. It's like there's not a lot of demand for it. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's
not
it.
Into exotic meats like we are now. There's an alligator in the corner. No one wants to eat that.
I don't know. Back in the bush in the day, obviously you ate what you could. Yeah,
so
it's a
you
village.
It's a little village. So people, if they want to order a sheep or get a bit of lamb or beef or whatever, they probably have their own.
That's the thing. They probably have their
own.
So,
yeah, I think probably just bad businessmen.
Yeah. We're spending a lot of time on Charles being a
shit businessman.
And I think we should. I think we should.
Absolutely.
I don't understand how he became bloody declared bankrupt. But anyway, they moved. They have to move several times.
I know why. They didn't sell chocolate-coated peanuts in their shop.
If he just had a sideline in that.
A little stack of those on a shelf somewhere, he would have made a fortune.
No one talks about that. You know, they moved several times for him to find work. I feel like he was leaving just all sorts of scandal in his wake that no one wanted to look into.
A lot of dead animals on the way.
A lot of dead animals like, oh, okay, this did not work out. Maybe he was doing something with the animals. You never know.
Thanks for that.
What? I'm not saying anything dirty. Just saying, maybe putting on a marionette show or something. That's why he wasn't a very good butcher. Entertain the children. No, he would go on to work for a variety of people. A bone dust manufacturer. Always good.
A bone dust manufacturer.
It does sound like shades of Madame Rachel, actually. Yeah, get some bone dust for your face. Bone broth. Worked as a carter, driving around stuff. And he also then found work at a wool shed in Botany, Sydney, in the early 1880s. So he's helping to deliver wool and the animal hides between the woolhead, the slaughterhouse, and the tannery. They ended up living in an area called Frog's Hollow.
Nice.
In
like
Botany. Now, Botany Bay.
Ooh,
now.
I got the new place, Frog's Hollow.
Oh my God, that's a great idea. Frog's Hollow.
I like that.
So good.
That's a good name. All right, I'm assuming that. No one else has that.
trademark. Well, Frogs Hollow aside, Botany Bay, now, if anyone has been there, and our lovely Australian listeners will confirm, Botany Bay is now a beautiful place. Absolutely stunning.
Full
gorgeous.
Of smugglers, it is.
Yes, absolutely full of smugglers. That's their main selling point on all the tourism ads.
The one in Broadstairs is.
Botany Bay in Australia, mate.
What? Do you think it was named after the Broadstairs?
It was English settlers who named it. It was Captain Cook. I don't think it was named after Broadstairs, though. At the time, bit of a swamp and a slum. Not very nice. Swampy. This is an area where all the houses are crammed together. So workmen's cottages, because this is a really huge area for the wool trade, for tanneries, for animal carcass. You have all of these houses crammed together. One water pump between, I don't know, 900 houses.
My God.
Or quite a few, certainly. Poor sanitation. They take a four-bedroomed house. So this is the couple, and by then, they're six children, but they also have to rent out space in the house to boarders in order to make ends meet. So cramped living conditions.
Yeah.
Charles is still reportedly known as a sober, honest, good-hearted, simple-minded
good for him.
Man. Oh, there we are. Not the best businessman, but we'll forgive everything.
With his drunken wife.
Well, Louisa is in turn known as a drinker who was fond of dress and gaiety.
Ooh.
And never dropped her habits of flirtation.
So that's where all the money went. Went on frocks.
Well, maybe. Maybe his insolvency
went
was
on booze and frocks.
Spending. She was also seldom sober when at home.
Mm.
Aren't we all? So Charles took his wife to task multiple times for the inappropriate behaviour she displayed around the borders of the house. It was always gentlemen.
Mm.
And she liked to go, hello, how are you? Oh, no, my shoulder, my ankle.
Coming out of the bathroom in a scantily clad in a dressing gown.
Oh, indeed, yes, absolutely. Only just wearing six nightgowns, as was the style at the time. But things got really worse when one Michael Collins moved in. Not the Irish freedom fighter.
Not him, okay.
No, not him. Michael was also a driver for the same company as Charles, and Louisa takes a liking to him. He's in his 20s when he moves in. She's in her 30s now. He's good looking, and he enjoys Louisa's company. Oh, he's taken with her. She's attractive, and she's still very
slightly
charming.
Slightly older woman.
She knows a thing or two. She's had a lot of children, so she must have done it that many times.
She's done it at least nine times.
At least nine times.
We practice at least once.
It's not long before whispers are circulating around Frog's Hollow. Probably people just shouting through the walls, actually, yeah. Rather than whispers.
Stop it!
Louisa and Michael, they have been stepping out together. They have been seen literally in the bushes. This is not just in the bush, in the bushes, kissing and canoodling behind one little shrub, maybe, on a street. We can see you.
Canoodling behind a shrub.
Yes. Scandalous. They like to take tram rides together.
Oh.
And they would kiss on the tram. Never heard it called that before. Yes, lots of kissing going on. Lots of kissing on trams and in bushes and shagging. We'll throw in some shagging in there as well. Louisa is only interested in her new lover, letting the housework slip. And Charles can only turn a blind eye for so long. He's out all day earning the wage, coming back to a disorderly house and his wife straddling the border. He eventually orders Michael out of the house. That's it. Enough's enough. Out you go. Michael leaves, but he still keeps sneaking back to see Louisa. One night, Charles comes home from work and he finds Michael sitting in the living room, probably in his chair. This turns into a blazing row where Charles literally throws Michael out of the house, like throws him onto the street, shouting and screaming that, you know, he did never come back, never darken my door again, and saying to Louisa, the same fate is coming to you. I will throw you out on the street if this carries on. Louisa is indignant. Indignant with rage. How dare he behave so appalling to her and her lover?
I'm not liking Louisa. I have to say, I'm trying to be sympathetic and trying, but no, just don't like her.
She goes straight to the police station to report her husband for this terrible
behaviour. For throwing
out
her lover?
Yes. For right. throwing him out on the street, and he is appalling, and like they must do something. Police are like, no. I don't think so. I think they do come to the house, as it's reported. They come round and go, maybe not. But Louisa is not going to give up.
No,
Michael.
I can
not going
not.
To give up her hot young lover. And wouldn't you know it, Nick? Mm-hmm. A few weeks later, Charles starts to feel quite ill, quite unwell.
What a surprise!
Stomach pains. Vomiting, diarrhea. Yeah, the usual.
The usual.
The usual.
Cholera.
Yeah, cholera. Obviously, it's cholera. He lives in the slums. Of course it is. Doctors are sent for. He's given medicine. But over the course of a week, he gets worse and worse and worse. The medicines aren't doing anything for him. Louisa, not fussed at all.
No, I can't imagine that bother.
Oh, dear. Oh, no. Oh, my. Oh, what a shame. She has more pressing matters to attend to than attending her sick husband.
Oh, absolutely.
She has to go straight to Sydney to draw up a new will for her husband.
The important things.
Needs to make sure that everything goes to her, should anything happen to him, including that lovely life insurance policy that he has, worth $200, equivalent of about $20,000 now. A lot of booze, a lot of booze. Charles does sign the will, and it's witnessed.
Yeah.
So it's not like she's forged anything. She's gone to draw it up while he's ill. Like, please sign this quite quickly.
Yeah. Well, it's not unsurprising that a husband would leave everything to his wife.
No, not at all.
So,
yeah.
So that's not an unexpected sort of will to have, one would imagine.
As well, yes. And also, he's got lots of children. So, and traditionally...
Oh, because he had children from his first marriage?
Well, I don't think that there are children from the first marriage, but he has an eldest son, Herbert. And Herbert would be entitled to some of the inheritance.
Mm.
He just would automatically be entitled to it. So I don't know if that was the rush about the will. It goes all goes to Louisa. On the 2nd of February 1887, Charles dies.
Mm.
The cause of death on the death certificate would read that it was of acute gastritis.
Those damn gases.
Yep. Acute stomach. Louisa, of course, does what any grieving widow would do. She leaves her children to watch the corpse, maybe with a neighbour looking in the window, while she goes straight to Sydney to inform the bank and the insurance company of his death. Money,
you've,
please!
You've got to get this admin sorted out.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it just runs away with you.
It just hangs over you, doesn't
exactly.
it? Exactly. It just...
Get it done, get it finished with, and you don't have to worry about it. You can think about other nicer things.
Mm, absolutely. So, yeah, the kids are just in the house with the body.
With the, yes.
Yeah, a neighbour comes round to check on the kids and she comes back like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, oh, no, thank you. Oh, that's great. No, we'll sort out the wake. Can you help me sort out the wake as well? Louisa also doesn't tell, apparently, her eldest son, Herbert, who had moved out of the house, who was an adult, doesn't tell him her father's died because he would have a claim.
Yeah. It does sound like he was potentially from the first marriage or something.
It seems that all the reports are written that he is her son.
Okay.
Yeah.
That seems particularly harsh.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
Yeah, maybe it has been convoluted over the time, so maybe it is from a previous one. But all the other ones seem to imply that it's her eldest son, but she doesn't want him muscling in.
That's particularly shitty.
When she comes back to the house, she prepares the body, but rather than throwing a somber wake, it's more of a massive party.
It's party time!
Party time, yeah. She doesn't wear black, doesn't wear morning dress. She puts on her finest frock. She is positively grinning, smiling.
Oh, indeed.
Smiling because Charles has gone and she is free. She is free. Mm. She doesn't have to live with her boring old husband anymore. Now, yes, we can look at that as okay. She was stuck in a marriage she didn't really like, but also...
No, I'm not seeing it like that.
No. Newly flush with cash, Louisa welcomes Michael back into the house.
Of course she does.
But days after her husband has been buried, much to the shock of the neighbours, and they are walking around arm in arm, blatant, brazen about it. And everyone's like, okay, she's a widow, fine, she's eligible, and she's got all this money, but come on.
It's been 3 days, come on.
It's not been long. And they buy new clothes, they buy new furniture for the house. Apparently they move house at one point, but she really wants to go back to that house in Frog's Hollow.
Well, she's got such fond memories there.
Clearly. When she moves, she can't buy back her original house, but she buys a house right behind it, apparently. So it can't be even that much of a slum.
Mm.
But yeah, new clothes, new furniture. Also the matter of Michael's gambling debts, which she pays off.
Of course.
Of course she would. She and Michael were married 3 months after her first husband had passed away. The wedding registration had her age down as 28 and him as 26.
Lies.
She was 39 at the time. So I don't know who she was lying to there, whether it was Michael or the
herself,
priest.
Herself, I
feel. No, honestly, I do. Don't you think I look young? Young. They're together now. Everything should be fine. They've got all that money. Not too much.
Yeah.
Nope, Louisa is still enjoying the drink, as she has the money to enjoy it. Michael is still helping himself to all her money, because he still likes the gambling. And he's amassing quite a lot of debt. So that big old inheritance, which should have taken care of them and the children for quite a while, that is
not
being
lasting long.
Absolutely whittled down, depleted very, very rapidly. her eldest son, around this time, Herbert, comes to visit her because he's found out his father has died and comes a knocking on the door. And there is a report that he comes in and he finds the children are dirty and unkempt and sort of running wild. She's pissed. Her new husband, she's married again. Right, I didn't know about that. And she's kind of confrontational with the son, and he's saying, well, where's the inheritance? She's like, we've spent it all. And he was like, but I could have invested it into a business and taken care of everyone. Why would you do this? And it ends up with them having a blazing row, and he becomes estranged, and she like kicks him out. This is his report later on. So it's, yeah, of course he was like, and I would have absolutely invested all of that money and taken care of everyone around it. He does paint himself as a very saintly picture, but he has still found out his dad has died.
I really don't like her. I really don't like her.
I am with you on this as well. I'm not a big fan of Louisa, but people have feelings about this. So I'm being balanced. I'm being as balanced as I can be on that. I do think, though, it's very convenient when family members later tell their story to the paper and they act like they were the most saintly people in the world who walked through the door. I'm sure he did walk in and went, what the fucking shit has gone on here? Louisa does fall pregnant and gives birth to a baby boy with Michael. The baby died 5 months later. Baby had been suffering from stomach problems. It did not have a very strong constitution. Some reports of the time are a little bit iffy, but others are just the baby died. The baby was not strong. And rumours would swirl that Louisa wasn't that bothered. Wasn't that bothered. Another child. Not really remorseful, but that Michael was very upset by it. Affected by his baby son's death. The baby ends up being buried in a pauper's grave. Oh. All that money is all gone.
It's all gone.
Or it doesn't go on a decent burial for the baby. So we're now left in this situation where the money is gone. Michael is grieving the loss of this baby boy. Louisa doesn't seem to be that affected. And things are taking a turn because now Michael has fallen ill. And I think that might be time for a drink.
I think it probably is.
Yes.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So, Nick.
Yes.
We have our drinks.
We do.
Michael has terrible stomach pains.
Yeah.
Yes. While working at the tannery and the wool shed and his job carting things to and fro, he is seen vomiting violently, complaining of terrible, terrible stomach pains, and has to be taken to his bed. Now, this time round, when the husband is in bed, suffering, Louisa is very attentive.
Okay.
Very attentive. She seeks medical attention repeatedly, goes to a doctor in Sydney asking for whatever medicines he can provide. She gives them to her poorly husband, tends to him, gives him mixtures in milk, in these tumblers of milk that she gives it to him. He's not getting any better.
No.
She asked the Sydney doctor, Dr. Marshall, to come to her home to examine him. As he comes to the home, he also consults the local doctor who had treated her first husband. And they look at Michael, and then the other doctor goes, oh, Charles, he was very, very similar. What happened to him? I don't know what that accent was,
no,
by the way.
Impressive.
And he's like, what the hell are you saying? But they somehow conclude the symptoms are very similar. And this is quite odd. And Dr. Marshall strongly suspects that poison is at play.
Yes.
He does not think this is normal. The other doctor probably goes, oh, yes, yes, I definitely thought that too. Didn't say anything at the time when Charles died. I just said it was stomach pain, but I knew,
I agree entirely.
A lot of hindsight there.
Yeah.
Michael gives no indication that he's worried that anything is happening to him, that there's any pain or anything. But on the 8th of July, 1888, he dies at home. So the doctors collectively refuse to give a death certificate to Louisa. They're asking for it. Where's my death certificate? No.
Yep.
No, and they report his death to the police. They bring it to their attention. The constables come, confiscate all the medicines in the house. The tumbler of milk that she had been giving to her husband is on the side. They take that away. They take that away. They don't cover it up, but they just take it. And just like, there we are. It's evidence. But everything is stripped of the house. Louisa is indignant during all of this, is completely distraught, saying that she will leave and she'll walk away. But the police say, no, you stay right here because we are now investigating this.
Yeah.
You aren't going anywhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's going to be an inquest. An autopsy is indeed carried out on Michael's body. The coroner reports that Michael's stomach contained a very large quantity of...
What could it be?
Arsenic! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Ooh, so much arsenic we have this month.
So much arsenic.
The 60s have all been about the arsenic, haven't they? Yes, arsenic is found in his stomach, enough to kill him. Apparently the milk glass that was taken from his home and the medicines were also tested and they find trace amounts of arsenic everywhere. arsenic here, arsenic there, arsenic everywhere. Louisa is arrested.
Good.
Now, formal inquests are now held following the autopsy into Michael's death, and it's also decreed that Charles should be dug up.
Nice.
And the baby. And the baby for testing. Oh, yeah. So inquests into them too, because before, just shove them in the ground. So now all these inquests are going on to determine whether she will stand trial. Michael is determined to have died from arsenical poisoning.
Arsenical.
Arsenical poisoning. Yeah. But of course they need to determine who had given it to him.
Right.
Louisa had her own theory that she presented to the inquest. She said Michael had poisoned himself.
Okay.
Slowly had been ingesting arsenic, had been taking it. Now, people took arsenic at the time. Over several days because of his heartbreak at losing the baby.
Right. Oh, so he was actually attempting suicide. He was actually attempting to kill himself.
Yes. Not just that he was taking it to give him a jolt or anything. It seemed to be that he was trying to take his own life. She also made...
There are better ways.
The point that why would she kill Michael? She had nothing to gain from his death. There was no life insurance. He was massively in debt.
Yeah.
Him dying did nothing for her situation.
Well, it frees her up to go and find some other sucker.
Maybe. But she could make that point. Penniless and in debt. That's what was left with. Because she was left with all of his debts as well. Still, the inquest concluded that Louisa had poisoned her husband, Michael. She would stand trial for this. The inquest into the baby, no trace of arsenic found. It was disregarded.
Oh, okay.
Charles's body, very faint amounts of arsenic. Again, this has been questioned because we've had many a case where bodies are dug up and a tiny, tiny, tiny trace of arsenic.
It's used in embalming and things, so...
It's in the ground.
It's in the ground, yeah.
It's in the ground, and it's in everything that you took back then, so it's normal to find a bit of arsenic, but compared to Michael, who seemed to have, like three grains of it in there. But still, that's enough. They go, arsenic in Charles's body. Yep, yep, she's to be tried for his murder as well. He died from arsenic poisoning and she did it.
Okay.
She did it. So they shall stand trial. On to the trials, Nick. And I say trials. Trial number one.
Okay.
1st of August, 1888. She stands trial for murdering Michael Collins, her second husband. At this trial, it's when her own daughter... May, who aged 11, takes the stand and gives the chilling evidence that while she was dusting, she noticed a box was missing from the shelves in the house. A box that she remembered having a great big rat on the front of it.
Okay.
And had the slogan, Rough on rats. Good old Rough on Rats was missing around the time that Michael got ill. The defense insist again that it was suicide. He was taking arsenic himself. The prosecution counter, no one would take arsenic over that many days and torture themselves to death.
No.
That's mad. The jury cannot reach a verdict. All the evidence is circumstantial.
Yeah.
They can't find evidence to go, she definitely gave him the poison. This business with the milk and the arsenic in the milk as well, there was medicine in there as well. And it's not, that wasn't enough to kill him. Yeah. So is that an indication she was putting stuff in? Or did he put it in there himself? Yeah. Who did it? Okay. Mistrial. Case is thrown out. On each of the occasions, it's lovely in the court reporting that the jury is locked up overnight and then released. Because they go, okay, you can't go anywhere until we've decided, oh, okay, fine, you can go.
Okay,
let's try again. Trial number two.
Okay.
October 1888. Again, for the murder of Michael Collins. The same evidence is presented, but with a fun addition. With a fun addition. Now, we remember what Michael's job was.
In the tannery.
Yeah, driving, handling, yep. Sheep, all sorts of things. Yep.
Carting stuff around.
Hides and stuff and handling sheep pelts that might have been treated with arsenic. They make this claim seemingly not very eloquently, however it's a very good argument really underneath everything, is that him being in contact with animal hides all the time and him picking them up and transferring them, particularly sheep, and particularly all the wool and everything like that, sheep are treated with arsenic to get rid of all the parasites. Famously. So they say, well, could that not have contributed to his death? If he was handling it, would he not have had arsenic in his system? The issue there is that, well, why isn't everyone who's ever worked there dead?
Yes, why isn't everyone in the entire factory dead?
But the sheep are the ones who are guilty. There you go, sheep.
So, but that combined with the little he was taking for medicinal purposes,
maybe
just pushed him over the edge.
Could be. The judge tells the jury, no, that's rubbish. Don't listen to that.
Nonsense.
But he tells them you still need to give Louisa the benefit of reasonable doubt. Regardless of the sheep business, do you have a reasonable doubt? The jury do, and they're unable to reach a verdict. Trial number three. 12 days later, this time they go for Charles Andrews. Yep, first husband. Okay, let's put her on trial for that one.
Might change it up a bit.
Same evidence again, but just move it to another husband. Okay, defense puts forward the idea that this is accidental absorption on his part as well, because he worked in the same industry. They bring in the owner of the company that Charles worked for, Mr. Geddes, and he confirms that hides that he would have handled did have arsenic. They would have been treated in that way. But he also said in his 19 years of business, no one has ever died from this.
Yeah.
So it's there. Again, more evidence. Jury can't reach a verdict.
Oof,
done. Dear. You'd think this would be the time where you go, okay, we tried.
No, crack on.
Trial number four, Nick.
Nice.
Trial number four, December 1888. Jack the Ripper stalks the streets. Back to Michael Collins. Third time now they're trying her for the murder of Michael Collins, and this is excessive at best. Regardless of what you think, prosecution will not let this go. Normally it would only take two mistrials for this to be abandoned, but they keep going. Weirdly at this time, Mr. Geddes is called again. Now, he would have been testifying in Charles's case, and he comes in with Michael, but now he says that Michael hadn't handled any hides that had arsenic treatment.
Okay.
So he says Charles had, but Michael, which was a defense they'd used two trials ago, if we're keeping up, no, he wouldn't. So let's throw that out. No, there's no way that he would have done that. So this time it only takes the jury 2 hours to return a guilty verdict. Louisa Collins is convicted of murder. Judge Darley, passing sentence, says that the murder of Michael Collins was one of the most peculiar atrocities. And he said to Louisa, you watched the slow torture and painful death, and this apparently without a moment's remorse, he says, as he sentences her to hang. Now, there is a lot of the reports about this case come from an account in the Sydney Evening Herald that was written around the time. Shows the level of journalist cryptic professionalism that you're dealing with. They wrote, the Botany Bay poisoner has been called the modern Borgia. And the comparison is apt enough to a certain extent. Both women were cold-blooded murderesses. And both were as incestuous as they were criminal in each other's respects.
Right. In each other's respects.
Lucretia Borgia was, however, a woman of education, of superior attainments, and a lover of the high art, while her modern imitator was a coarse, illiterate woman and a drunkard.
She wasn't popular.
No, she wasn't popular, and Lucretia Borgia, oh, but she pretty and she liked some pictures. And also, she didn't fucking do anything! If we can please make that point, Lucretia Borgia didn't do anything! Leave her alone! But a huge amount of mixed feeling about this outcome. Because there are plenty of people who are like, yeah, Louisa Collins was not a liked person. She did not behave appropriately in society. Whatever we want to think about that now, it wasn't appropriate at the time to many people's opinions. Mm. And also, two of her husbands are dead. And her first husband, she wasn't shy about not liking and finding very boring. But should she be hanged? People felt that she may have been unfairly targeted by what we would now call the male establishment, because they were very worried about women getting uppity.
Getting ideas.
Ideas above their station. They're very worried about poisoners. They're very worried about poisoners, you know.
As one should be in general, I
yes,
think.
Around this time. I mean, they were a little later than maybe some of the Victorians in England, but very worried about women. Oh, they're just actually going to kill us. They can kill us in our own homes. And women shouldn't be doing that. No. Painting the women as the worst and the most awful criminals of all. These women who were acting out because they were being sick of being treated like second-class citizens. Well, now, okay, fine. You can have equality because the law decreed that she be hanged for murder and men and women can be equal in terms of punishment and the law. But you don't get the vote. And this is a thing that people clung on to at the time, and it made a big difference later on, is saying you can say that Louisa Collins, for whatever you think of what she did, you're saying she's equal to a man in terms of the punishment she receives, because there were loads of men and other people saying she shouldn't be hanged. She's a woman. She's a mother. We can't do this. And the law was very firm. No, she shall receive the same justice as a man. And all the girls go, great, do we have the vote now? You can't pick and choose. So, big debate here. There was a huge campaign to stop her being hanged. Many people writing in and using kind of, but she's a woman, she's frail,
She's a wicked feeble lady.
No. Her children even petitioned and commissioned the governor of New South Wales at the time, Charles Carrington, reviewed all of the petitions, and he came back and he said it was with deep sorrow, but he had to uphold the law. He was his duty bound to accept the sentence of the court. And as sad as it was like, no, she is to be hanged. I can't intervene. She would go to the gallows on the 8th of January, 1889. She would be hanged by a man helpfully named as Nosy Bob.
Nice.
Loved getting into people's business. Did Nosy Bob. Loved to gossip. Now, it wasn't because of his gossipy ways.
Because he had no nose?
Yes.
Or a very large nose?
He had no nose.
Did he chop it off by mistake one day?
No, he was kicked in the face by a horse. I don't know if he was trying to hang the horse at the time. And the horse just meted out his own justice.
As a horse would.
Also, people are awful, aren't they? Because if you've got no, if you've been disfigured by a fucking horse and all your mates are gathered around and you come back from the doctors and everyone's got, okay, right, so Robert's coming in. Robert's going, don't say anything. Okay, we shouldn't say anything because he's going to feel a bit funny. Okay, all right, Nosy Bob. Nosy Bob. No nose. Yeah, you twat. That.
How these
so
work.
Nosy Bob standing there going, well, this has been lovely. Not a very good hangman either as well. They could have just called him shitty hangman and that would have been better. No. So Louisa comes to the gallows quietly. She'd spent the morning praying with the chaplain. The chaplain would later say that she gave her confession to God Almighty, but did not indicate whether that was a confession about anything else. Just she purged her sins. She was quiet. Apparently, she was quite steady. She didn't really flinch. She came on, the noose was placed around her neck. Bob went to the lever and pulled. Nothing happened. He's like, shit.
Come on,
Bob. Oh, it's stuck. The pin's stuck. I can imagine him yelling this.
Yeah.
Because he was like, oh, he's shoveling around at it. Louisa's trying to maintain like a stoic kind of steady dignity. He ends up getting a hammer and just twatting the lever about 5 times to knock this pin out.
Nice.
Just probably go, you bastard, you fucking mother. Hit that. Finally, the trapdoor opens. She goes down at a curved angle, apparently, which is not nice. The rope stretches. She is killed instantly, it seems, but with a nice spurt of blood.
Nice. A bit of drama at the end.
Spurt of blood. Other reports of other more lurid papers say blood gushed forth. But there was a clear spurt of blood because the force of the drop had torn open her neck, exposed her windpipe, and like practically decapitated her. So her head was just sort of lolling, and then just blood was just running down her body.
Well,
but
that's gonna do your artery, isn't it?
So they left her hanging there for 20 minutes.
Just to make sure.
Just to make sure. I mean, she was dead. The bitch was dead. She was dead.
Her head's almost off. Yes, that's going to do the trick.
Then she was cut down and she was buried in Rockwood Cemetery, which is still there today, which I think her first husband was also buried in. The execution caused more outrage because she had died in such a brutal way. And one report read, "It was cold-hearted, cowardly, damnable. If it had been the duty of those men to slaughter some dangerous animal, every possible care would have been taken to have had the machinery at their command in thorough working order. But because they had to deal only with a defenseless woman, no thought was given to the condition of the principal means of putting her out of her existence. Some such wretched bungling has occurred before in various places, but should it be repeated in these colonies, the people of Australia with one voice should demand that the gallows be raised, never be allowed again to be erected anywhere throughout these lands, and it should be cast down at any rate and utterly abolished."
I'll go with that.
Yeah. People have debated for years whether or not Louisa was guilty of both murders, or if she had just been used as an example. Is it possible she had killed her first husband, but what about Michael? Why did it take 4 trials to find her guilty, and should it have reached 4 trials? Her name was not very well known, as some writers have pointed out, for many, many years afterwards, even though this case was sensational at the time, and people have suggested that it was society's guilt at meting out this justice to her. Her case has also been credited as helping the suffrage movement. Women were able to use her case as an example of hypocrisy. You cannot deem us equal in the eyes of the law and also refuse to give us the same rights as men in modern society. So Louisa's death may have served a purpose in the end, but did she deserve to be on the gallows, or was she guilty of much worse? And that is the story of Louisa Collins. Well, what do you think, Nick?
I think she's a horrid woman. I very rarely do I have such a visceral reaction to someone.
I'm intrigued that you've had such a visceral reaction
absolutely.
To her.
No, really don't like her.
Yeah.
No, I try to be generally sympathetic and sort of see it, but no, I think it's a vile woman. Did she deserve to hang? No.
I don't believe in capital punishment at all.
So was she guilty? Yes. Certainly the first husband. Second one, questionable. But certainly, I think certainly the first one. And I just don't think she was a very nice woman whatsoever.
I agree with you. Researching this, and there's a very, very good book written about her by one female writer who did a really good job of it. And, you know, this one writer and a couple of others afterwards did take more of a feminist view of it and saying, you know, actually, is this the whole story? Is this the whole story? Was Louisa used as a scapegoat? It does seem that, she may have killed her first husband, Michael. Maybe he was just annoying her. She got away with the first one. Same sort of thing.
Maybe.
Does it mean that she's the worst woman who ever lived? No.
No, absolutely not.
But her case stacks up with so many of the other poisoners that we've ever covered.
I think she's approaching more of a psychopath than some others who have done it because they have lived and experienced dreadful, dreadful things. Some women who have been treated appallingly by husbands and what have you. And have suffered horrendously at their hands. And then you think, okay, that's not that it's justified, but it's understandable why someone would act out in that. Yes, she didn't have much fun.
With
her first husband.
Yeah, that's not an excuse to kill someone. There's never an excuse to kill someone.
He wasn't abusive. He wasn't violent or anything like that. Yes, he was boring. But
and people will argue that, oh, well, we don't know. What if that didn't come out because the patriarchy were covering it up? And
it does come out every other time, though. It comes out all the other time. So why didn't it on this one?
She could have easily used that as an excuse and said he was a terrible, terrible man. And she could have said all manner of things.
I wanted to have some fun. I couldn't. he was stifling my outgoing. Yes, he's 15 years older. Mm. He's done his fun life with his first wife or something. He just wants to sit down and now and have.
He was just naturally a boring person. And she was very vivacious.
Terrible match. Absolutely.
Yeah, she shouldn't have been forced into a marriage in the first place with this guy. She shouldn't have been shoved in there. She should have been allowed, hopefully, to have found someone. Yeah, it seems pretty cut and dry. There's a lot of arsenic involved. And with Michael, maybe she was just getting fed up with his antics.
Thought,
well, why not?
Yeah, if he gets better, the gambling's only going to get worse. The debt's going to get more. Do I quit while I'm ahead? She didn't gain anything from that one like she did with the first one.
The issue I have with it, regardless of what Louisa did, we look at other cases we've covered, is the number of trials. Because you've had mostly men, you've had a couple of women, famously, who they couldn't reach a decision on, and that's it, done. They walk free. We've had some notorious murders who just the evidence was so much more. And the men walk free, and that's it. They're like, oh, well, we didn't get him. And they just went after her relentlessly, like three trials for the same murder and another one thrown in there, just again and again and again and again until a jury kind of went, oh, my God, all right. How fair was the system there? And
we know the system wasn't fair.
And it's really tough
for women at that point. Absolutely,
it's tough because she probably did it. But to take four trials to convict her, to keep going and going and going, but other people didn't get that. And it's like, well, okay, look, you've got to be fair. But yeah, and then she ended up being hanged.
It's a tricksy one.
I think that's the debate at the end that gets people. I don't think there's any argument that she did some bad stuff.
No.
Yeah. Personally, I don't. Maybe there is something that I've missed, that there was a third person hiding behind the big grassy bush where she was kissing. I don't think the system was fair in the end, regardless of whether or not she was an innocent in it. But it did help the suffrage movement.
Well, there we go. Yeah, that achieved something good.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, people? What do you think of the case of Louisa Collins? Do you think that she was guilty? Do you think she absolutely did everything she was accused of? Or do you think she was innocent? Do you think she was a victim of circumstance? Are there more bits of this story that haven't been covered that you've heard about that you'd like to share with us? Did she receive justice in the end? Or something else. Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments wherever you listen to this episode. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, your musings, your essays on this. But most importantly, while musing away, you must mix up The Lion and the Lamb. The Lion
went down a right treat.
It was good.
Good one.
That
absolutely
was tasty.
Yeah, definitely.
But it does feel Christmassy.
It does have a definite Christmassy twang about it. So perhaps not the best one for the height of summer.
Well, it's good because we're previewing this.
This is true. It's one for the book for, a Boxing Day, Christmas Eve. Oh, yes, that'll go down a treat.
Oh, yeah. We'll mix some of those up. For a Christmas special, we'll revisit this.
We'll be having many of these.
Mix up the cocktail. If you've tried the pimento liqueur, is this a liqueur or a spirit?
I'd probably call it liqueur.
A liqueur?
Yeah.
If you've tried it before, let us know. Let us know. Are there other cocktails that you've tried it in? Are you a big fan of it? Tell us the history of that as well. And did it kill anyone? We'd love to know. And also send us your pictures of any cocktails you are enjoying wherever you are in the world. Please share them on Instagram. Share them to your own stories and tag us in it because it means that we can reshare them with others. You can DM us and it's nice, but we'll just go, hey, that's nice. But then we'll just have a chat. Be lovely. Please follow us on TikTok if you haven't already because we share lots of little funny videos in there and we'd love to have more comments and just more attention on there. Really, really helps to elevate the podcast. Join us on Patreon if you haven't already and leave us a review on Apple iTunes if you can. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Poison.